Kev here, just to give a quick trigger warning on today's episode, there are mentions of both domestic abuse and the suffering of miscarriages. What would you believe if a warning came to you in a dream and that danger appeared the very next day? If a stranger seemed to know impossible details about the dead you loved, would you call it coincidence or proof they never really left? Last week's beginning to this two-part experience ended in tragedy. And this week, our final questions are the dead still watching? And if so, is that good or bad for Catherine? Well, as the saying goes, there's only one way to find out. So join me on today's episode of The Dark Paranormal.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal with Kevin Eustace.
Hello everyone and welcome to the second half of season 24 of The Dark Paranormal. Last week we heard the first part of Catherine's deeply traumatic and unsettling account, beginning with a childhood marked by abuse, institutional care, and the first signs that something beyond this world may have been trying to reach her. From the little girl, who only Catherine could see in the hospital, who seemed to know the truth behind Catherine's illness, to the ghostly figures witnessed in residential schools and cemeteries. Each encounter appeared at moments of fear, isolation, and danger. But the episode ended with the devastating loss of Catherine's sister Michelle and her beloved children in a house fire. A tragedy Catherine believes she may somehow have been warned about beforehand. In today's conclusion, we pick up in the aftermath of that traumatic loss as Catherine tries to rebuild her life. And so, it's that time in the show where I ask you to lower the lights, make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door, as we hear the concluding part to this experience, The Watching Dead, The Closing. After Michelle died, things became quiet. I screwed my head on and got stuck into my studies. I even joined a part-time college course. I wanted to make Michelle and the kids proud wherever she was. I didn't see my mum too much. She'd all but pulled away from me. My brother had his own life too, so we didn't speak. The only people who were consistent in my life was my nana and granddad. And I would be at theirs every weekend and started dating a guy who was from Stirling. I was 14 years old when Michelle passed. And when I turned 15, I met this guy through a friend. He was 21 back then. But back then it was seemingly more normal to date older guys, wasn't it? So here I was, doing all I could to make my sister proud, when I started having dreams. My boyfriend was in them, but there was always someone behind him in the shadows. Occasionally, Michelle would pop up in these dreams and push this shadow person away, and I would wake up feeling safer. One weekend, I'm back at my boyfriend's house when he drops the bombshell that his dad was moving back in with him and his mum. Now, I knew his dad had been in jail, but I didn't think to ask why he was in jail. It would be a few months later, when they had moved into a new home, and a brick came flying through the window, I found out I was sharing a home with a registered child sex offender. Before I knew this, every time I spent the night with my boyfriend, I would dream of Michelle pushing this shadow person away. It was always so prominent. to the point that when I would wake up, I would always get up and go and close the now open door. I used to say to my boyfriend to make sure the door was closed, as obviously I didn't want his parents in the room. His dad was a bit creepy, but I thought it was just because he was quiet. Little did I know about his past. That brick coming through the window, well, that was the last I'd seen of the boyfriend. And of my dreams of Michelle and the shadow person. I'm not sure if this was Michelle trying to warn me, but I'm glad she did raise my awareness at least. As I approached 16, I knew my time in Curl was coming to an end, and I started preparing for my own tenancy. It's scary to think that at the age of 16, I would be solely responsible for a flat, for all the bills. I knew I needed to find a job to support myself. So I began working at a hotel next to the university. I had to leave school and moved into a cute little bedsit. It was all I needed, really. I knew that upon leaving Carr, I wasn't welcome at my mum's house. My brother had gone a little off the rails, so I decided Stirling would be my hometown. And I loved it there. I worked in the hotel without any paranormal experiences for around 6 months. And then I started having the dreams again. Michelle was now around a lake, playing by the water with the kids. As I would approach, she would shake her head and point away. I would then wake up all alone, and the pain of Michelle not being there was all I had in my chest. My mental health was having a knock-on effect from everything. I think maybe the fact Michelle had died when I was 14, I was abandoned by my mum at 15, and now, age 16, I was responsible for myself. Present day, being a mum myself now, I can't imagine any of my own children standing on their own 2 feet at 16. So as I approached my 17th birthday, I had a bit of a breakdown. I was found in my flat, unwashed, soiled, and like I hadn't eaten or slept in weeks. I was a mess and needed some inpatient treatment. I'm not ashamed to admit that, as let's face it, I sure as hell had been through the mill. A few weeks later, I was discharged, and my friends all rallied around me. One day, my friend suggested we go for a walk up to the reservoir at the back of Stirling the following day. I agreed it sounded like a great idea, and was just what I needed, so we arranged to meet at mine at some point in the late morning, and we'd all walk up together. That night I tossed and turned, having the same dreams with Michelle and the kids at the water and her rapidly shaking her head and pointing the other way. When my friend came to my flat the following day, I looked like shit, and he didn't hold back in telling me so. He'd invited some other friends along, and I didn't want to ruin the day, so off we went. It was an unusually warm day for May, so we all wore shorts and t-shirts. As we marched through the hills, the idea of going for a swim was thrown around, and by the time we reached the reservoir, we were all stripping off and heading for the water. Now, I would just like to add that I'm not a strong swimmer, and also I'd had a little smoke that I really shouldn't have, but I didn't care as we all jumped into the freezing water. Some of the guys were swimming across the water, and I thought I'd try and join them. Forgetting I was, one, stoned, and two, couldn't really swim. By the time I reached the middle of the water, the stoned part wore off, and I realised I was in the middle of a huge mass of water. Not just that, but something was grabbing at my leg. I freaked out, and under I went. I was bobbing under and screaming for help as one of my friends swam out to help me. He reached me, but in my panicked state, I climbed on top of him, pushing him under the water. He pushed me away and swam away a little before shouting at me, "Come on, Catherine, swim to me, just a little bit, swim." He encouraged me like this as I splashed and flailed until I could feel the pebbles under my feet. Then he carried me out of the water. He wrapped me in a towel as I sat staring across the water, looking at my sister, stood looking over at me, tears flowing down my face. My friends all came running towards me, crowding round me, and when I peered round them, Michelle had just gone. In her place was all of our stuff that we left abandoned at the other side of the reservoir. I was a shaking, terrified mess as we walked to the bottom of the hill later on so we could get a taxi to my flat. My two friends stayed the night as I sobbed myself to sleep. I couldn't exactly tell them I was crying for my sister, who had just been watching me as I drowned. My battle with depression deepened until I was 20, when one day I woke and suddenly felt better, like a sheet had been lifted off my head. I could see and feel the sunlight again. I managed to get a job in a youth information centre, and I thrived there. I think coming from a curb background as well as my own personal traumas, I could relate to these people and help navigate them for the appropriate help they required. It was here I met my boyfriend and we really hit it off. His love for metal music was surreal for me as I'd never really heard it before. All I'd heard was techno and dance music. He introduced me to going to concerts, but also a little of the occult. We even had a friend who practiced witchcraft. She was convinced she could change the weather. So whenever I hung out a washing, I would fire her a wee text, asking her to make sure it didn't rain. I never shared any of my experiences with him, as I didn't want him to think I was crazy. We would watch movies on the occult, and he would Google things and share his findings with me. I was very much just playing along, as I didn't believe in any of it. The relationship was great, he was a truly amazing person, but I just wasn't in love with him. I knew he would make a wonderful partner for someone, but that someone wasn't me. I didn't realize this until I had yet another breakdown and was hospitalized again. This time, my depression grew arms and legs and gripped onto me hard. I was almost paralyzed with fear any time I tried to leave the house, until one night when I was in bed asleep and I felt a tug at my feet. I opened my eyes and I could swear I saw someone stood at the bottom of the bed. I asked my boyfriend to go away and leave me alone. So when I heard the door open, I assumed it was him. Hearing the front door open had me sit upright, as why was he leaving the house? I jumped out of bed and headed to the door. It was open slightly, so I pulled it ajar and whispered my boyfriend's name down the stairs. No sound except my own echo. I stepped outside and walked to the bottom of the stairs, three levels down. Still no sign of him. I peeked out of the actual building. There's no one there. I climbed the stairs thinking I'll call him when I go back in the flat. When I reach the flat, he's asleep on the couch. However, what overcame my fear was that at that point I realized I'd ventured out and everything was okay. I began to build on this, but the depression got worse again, and I made the mistake of trying to end my life. I was hospitalized again, but this time I was also hallucinating. Or so I thought. I was so worked up that I felt that I could see vibrations. I was sedated, or so they thought, but I kept running around the ward, seeing these vibrations and shadows everywhere. I was restrained and held down as they injected me with more sedatives. But again, I was up and running until I saw her. There, at the end of the hall, was Michelle. She just stood there shaking her head at me, her auburn hair gently flopping from side to side. I sat instantly on the floor, curled up and cried. I was escorted into a bedroom where I cried for the sister, nieces and nephew I'd lost. I cried for all the trauma I'd been through, and slowly I began to rebuild myself. My boyfriend was so supportive through this whole thing, but I still knew I needed to end it. He deserved much more than me. He deserved someone who truly loved him, not just this safety he made me feel. So he moved out of the flat, and I found myself on an even darker path. I somehow got mixed up with a local drug addict. And not only that, I also managed to get myself made pregnant by this guy. As my baby bump grew a little bit, he emptied my home. All my personal belongings, including Michelle's jewelry. When I confronted him, he threatened me with a needle full of God knows what, and I fled. Luckily for me, I was still being supported by a team that specializes in care leavers, and the worker there got me in a place at a homeless shelter. During the time when I was hospitalized, I had to resign from my job. I was in no fit state to advise anyone, so I was living on benefits. Here I was now in a hostel and living on meager accounts. Not only this, but I was pregnant. Once I was settled in my room in the hostel, I began to familiarize myself with the area. On returning from a walk, I fell asleep in the afternoon, but I dreamt I was stood in a room with blood at my feet. There was a dark shadow against the wall, and I felt scared as it moved towards me. I awoke to find myself shaking, and I began experiencing pains in my stomach. I went to the bathroom and I noticed the blood. I called down to the staff at reception and told them what was happening. Next thing I know, I'm in a taxi and I'm being met at the hospital by my support worker and a nurse. I was taken in for an ultrasound to reveal not only had I lost the baby, but I had massive scarring and tears, which apparently would mean I had zero chance of carrying any baby to full term. Just another in a series of punches to the gut, I thought. On returning to the hostel, I approached reception to thank them for being helpful and for getting me so quickly to the hospital, and also to update them. There, in the corner, staring at me, was an old friend I'd worked with in the youth centre. He came right across and said, "You don't belong here. We'll help you get back on your feet." In all of this darkness, here was this glimmer of hope. And true to his word, he was there daily for me. He would go out on his lunch break and he would make sure I ate. At the weekend, he would take me clubbing and we had a great time. He was my best friend and savior. When I met a new boyfriend, my friend was all positive affirmations and encouragement, even though I was still working through so much. When I got the keys to a new flat, he was there with the overalls and the paintbrushes. He helped organize getting what was left in my flat in Stirling and helped me set up home. There were no dreams, no shadows, just a positive glow about me. I wasn't feeling too great about the relationship with my boyfriend, so I decided I would break that off before he got too attached. I'd arranged to meet him after I'd been to my doctor's appointment, where I had to enroll and meet the nurse for the routine urine and blood tests. The appointment ran late, so my boyfriend came to meet me at the nurse's office. As I knew I would only be in and out, as she was only checking for infection, I said he could come into the room. Little did we know what was about to happen next. As she took my sample, she turned and said, "We also do a routine pregnancy test," and asked when my last period was. Well, I had no idea, as I always was a regular, and we'd been very careful also. My poor boyfriend collapsed when she turned smiling and informed us we were expecting. Okay, guys, I need to talk to you about money. Why? Well, it's high on my agenda at the moment as I'm looking to move not just house, but country. So I have a money goal that I'm really striving to achieve. And let's just say, to say I've got some way to go is an understatement. But I'm trying not to fixate on where my money is now, because so many people are focused on where their money is today. Acorns is the financial wellness app that cares about where your money's going tomorrow. And something I think is wonderful that Acorns have is the Acorns Potential Screen, so you can find out what your money is capable of. You guys know I've worked with Acorns for a while, and the reason I love working with them is because they take away the scare factor from investing. But in reality, investment and investing should mean the same for one person as it does for the next. Acorns is a smart way to give your money a chance to grow. It's easy. You can sign up in minutes and start automatically investing your spare money, even if all you've got is spare change. Acorns is an all-in-one. No more finance apps cluttering up your phone. With Acorns, you can invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. Sign up now and Acorns will boost your new account with a $5 bonus investment. Join the over 14 million all-time customers who've already saved and invested over $27 billion with Acorns. Paid on client endorsements. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 2 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age, and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
I couldn't believe it, but I also knew I couldn't carry to full term, so I told my boyfriend not to worry, explaining the situation, and I told the nurse to book an appointment with the GP so I could discuss next moves. That night, I lay in bed, thinking of the fact I had a baby that would never walk the earth in my tummy. I closed my eyes and said out loud, "Michelle, please take care of my babies." I cried myself to sleep, and I dreamt of Michelle just standing next to my bed. I awoke with a start the next morning, looking for her, but obviously she wasn't there. I was getting used to this pain as the dreams had been happening for years. She would just stand around, but it was still comforting in a weird way when I woke, like she was still watching over me. I met with a midwife who'd done the usual check, and she told me I would be referred to someone special in this unit at the maternity hospital. But before this appointment could happen, I was taken to hospital with severe bleeding. I was only 10 weeks. So when I presented at the hospital, I was sent to the early pregnancy unit. Sitting in the waiting room, I prayed to anyone who would listen for everything to be okay. The blood was flowing fast. I genuinely thought I was going to lose everything I had in my body. Yet when I went in and the nurse did an internal examination, there was my alien-shaped baby with a very strong heartbeat. The doctors had no idea where the blood had come from, but as soon as I was scanned, it stopped. This happened almost weekly up until I was 29 weeks. However, given what I was previously told, I didn't allow myself to believe I was going to be a mother. So when week 30 came and there was no blood, there was a glimmer of hope. This is when the dreams become too real, so real that they scared me. Always Michelle standing as though guarding me from something behind her. She would be at my bed holding something back, and then I would wake. By 34 weeks pregnant, I was still dubious. After attending another midwife appointment, I was surprised to receive a call from my mum, one to say she was coming for a visit at the weekend. When I asked why, she said to buy a pram, to which I told her not to bother, as the baby won't survive. In a very stern tone, she delivered the news that I, in fact, would be a mother, and that I'd best prepare for it. I was still with my boyfriend, and we decided to make a go of it as we both wanted to be there for our child as a family unit. I allowed him to prepare for the arrival of our daughter, and soon we had everything in the home for our baby to arrive. I was a wreck, not sleeping, having vivid dreams, but the midwife said it was normal. I wasn't too sure. You see, these dreams were of shadow people snatching my baby from me. I was terrified. And then the day came when I went into labour. It was quite quick, especially for a first child. My mum had come back to Scotland to be present at the birth, and my boyfriend, well, was a bit useless, just in the background, saying things to try and help, but that just annoyed me during the birthing process. As the labour pains intensified, I was moved into a bath to help ease these, or so the midwife said. As I lay there in this bath, my mum at my side and the midwife at the bottom of the bath, pouring water over my tummy, I could see movement behind my mum. My boyfriend was sat on the toilet, which was to the side of the bottom of the bath, so I knew it wasn't him, yet this person was like sliding against the wall from right to left. As my mum moved to the side slightly, there, clear as day, was my sister smiling at me, whispering something I couldn't quite hear. I told my boyfriend to be quiet so I could hear my sister, to which my mum's head snapped round, looking to where I was looking, and then she left the room. I didn't know what was happening until the midwife said I needed to get out of the bath as I was going to deliver. Now I couldn't see either my mum or my sister, and I was really scared. All of a sudden, my mum appeared, eyes red from crying, stroking my hair, saying she was so sorry for abandoning me. And within 10 minutes, my beautiful daughter entered the world with my sister staring at her from across the room. Now, I know all this must sound crazy, especially coming from someone who has declared mental health issues, but I truly believe that Michelle was there throughout my pregnancy, shielding me from whatever wanted my baby. She was there whenever there was badness lurking, but also for the celebrations. After my first daughter was born, I didn't see Michelle for a long time. I split from my daughter's dad and entered a new relationship. Now, this was the most darkest, violent relationship I'd ever encountered. I'm so sad to say that this man not only abused me, but he got to my girls too. We also had two children together. And from almost instantly, the gaslighting began. I felt constantly as though I was losing my mind. Things were being moved. I was accused of not saying things that I had. I was told I was imagining conversations we'd had. It was horrific. Then the violence started, and oh by gosh, was I beaten to within an inch of my life. Yet throughout all of this, no dream visits from Michelle. No sightings of her, just this battle to try and keep my family safe. Finally, after a kidnapping and a battle back from the brink of death, I got free. It took a long time to get back on my feet, but I was lucky to have the support of social services to get me there. I had a flat that I'd stayed with my ex in, and the girls shared a room whilst I was sorting the small room for their new baby brother. The girls liked their room, but would often talk into midair from the floor as though answering someone above them. I thought it was just child's play and dismissed it, with everything else going on. I didn't have the headspace to even consider paranormal issues, so I let it go. It wasn't until I went to a spiritualist church that my eyes were well and truly opened. I was very skeptical about these things. Surely it was all a scam. I'd seen one psychic before who performed at a pub. She stood swaying slightly from the drink she'd had, asking who knew a Mary, a Jim, an Anne? All the common names, yet nothing else, really. So when I went to this church, I was prepared for pretty much the same thing. How mistaken I was. As I watched other people get messages, I was still very closed-minded. Until the two spiritualists who were on the platform turned to each other. The tall one started to cough. He was rubbing his chest, saying, "The person I have has passed from a lung condition." He then looked at the other spiritualist with his eyes wide, in what I can only describe as fear, and shook his head. He said this wasn't a lung condition, but smoke. He looked again at the spiritualist and said, "But it's not for you." The other spiritualist sat down as the tall one surveyed the room, slightly coughing and pulling out his inhaler. After taking a couple of sprays, he turned to the room and said this person had died in a fire, all while his hands were doing this patting motion as if on small heads. He then said, "With these little ones." I said nothing. What could I say? I sat quietly awaiting what would be said next, and to my amazement, he began to sing. He sung a Scottish song that my granddad would sing to Michelle's kids, called Ali Bally Bee, and I felt my eyes fill. I knew it instantly, and I knew this was Michelle and her kids. He asked if anyone could take this. I slowly raised my hand, tears flowing. No one in this room knew me, and they certainly didn't know my story. He told me how she was always with me, protecting me, and guiding me as best she could. He told me how she was the last to close her eyes after watching all her babies, one by one by age, fall asleep. No one would know that detail. I was in shock. And then he said he would tell me the rest in private. The service ended and he came straight over, apologizing that he'd upset me, but reiterating how Michelle had been trying to protect me. He said that the worst of the darkness was over and I was to allow the happiness in. I had to believe I deserved it. He gently touched my elbow and walked to the other spiritualist who was still sitting. After they spoke for a moment, the shorter man approached me and said he too had lost a sister in a house fire, but he'd never felt such sadness or tragedy in a room like he had that night. He said that lifted when they started to bring their love and protection forward for me. This was the validation I needed, that for all those years, Michelle had been there, right there guiding me by my side. Now, the little girl at the beginning of my tale, whilst I was in hospital, that's a different story. I like to believe that she sensed the tragedy we both shared and wanted to make sure that I was heard and protected. I hope that in doing this, she found peace and was able to pass on. I hate to think she's still lingering inside a children's hospital. If you do a search and look for the Good Shepherd Centre in Bishopton, you'll find many photos and some tragic stories of the runaway girls, those who managed to jump from the bridge. So if any of this has piqued your interest, I also have many more stories of how, when I met my now husband, we had a shared experience, as well as our children having many experiences themselves that would terrify you. And no, it was never Michelle that came to visit them. It was always a much darker presence around the kids. I hope that even if this doesn't make it to your podcast, you find some interest in it. As I said to my husband and my two eldest girls, who read it before I sent it, now it's someone else's story to share. Kindest regards, Catherine. Well, Catherine, we feature and have featured very few two-part stories, back-to-back stories, that is, on the Dark Paranormal as a series in general. And the reason for that is so we can keep the listener engaged with what's taking place through someone's experience. However, after listening, or should I say reading, your experience, I knew we needed to include it for this season as a two-parter. I normally shy away from two-parters, but I would say to anyone who's only listened to this section, please go back and listen to episode 5, then re-listen to this, and you will hear the entirety of the narrative from Catherine. Because as one solo piece, this is one of the most terrifying, tangible, and emotional experiences I think we've genuinely ever covered. I think by now everyone knows I'm going to ask you to send those stories you refer to at the end into us, please. That would be fantastic. And I can only say once again, my sincere condolences for the loss of your sister, her children,
and for everything that you went through. The very fact you had the strength to go through all of that, come out of it on this side, and then send the story through to us speaks volumes about your strength of character. So thank you, Catherine. Unbelievably, we've only got 4 more episodes to go of this season. But don't let that stop you from sending your experience through to us. You never know, you still might make it in the final 4. This is how we work the show. It's not a case of first come, first served. It's a case of arrive whenever, what fits best. And over the 23 seasons we've done previous to this, I've found that that is the best way to do these things. Fate seems to put the right story at the right place at the right time. Now, of course, we're an independent podcast. That means it's just me and my very small team of volunteers. But we're punching way above our weight thanks to our wonderful team of supporters, both over on Patreon and those who leave us nice reviews or subscribe to the show. And you can subscribe to the show right now on whatever device you're hearing my voice on in about 5 seconds, totally free of charge. If you wish to become a Patreon, our starting tier will make sure we'll get rid of those pesky ads. The second tier means you receive early access to every episode on our main feed and no adverts too. And our third tier means you receive both of the below, as well as 2 additional Patreon-only shows each and every week. Most shows only offer 1 per month, maybe 2 per month. We offer 8 per month, and they're at least 30 minutes in length. So not only do you support the show, you receive an extra 4 hours of additional content at least every month. One show is called Dark Bites, where we take a look at some of the shorter experiences sent by our listeners. Another show is called After Dark, which is me basically trying to make up or come up with some theories about what we've discussed over that week or the week prior. Now, After Dark's relatively new. We've done maybe about 8 of those, but that is a weekly occurrence. And Dark Bites has been going for a good few years now, and there's a back catalogue there for people on that tier of well over 200 hours of Patreon-only material that you can sit and binge at your leisure. It's especially great during the downtime between seasons. Just head over to the show notes and you'll find a link there for Patreon and a link to submit your story, or go direct to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But a huge thank you not only to Catherine for her 2 amazing episodes, but also to each and every one of you guys. And remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always try to leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll speak to you next time for episode 7 of season 24 of The Dark Paranormal.